We're going to be looking in that in Mark 15 this morning as we're wrapping up our consideration of the cross. And as we come to this section, we're really picking up in the middle of the crucifixion, starting at the after the first 3 hours were over and looking to the end of the second 3 hours. And so Mark 15, verse 33, it says, "And when the sixth hour was come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which is being interpreted, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And some of them that stood by when they heard it said, Behold, he calleth Elias. And one ran and filled a sponge full of vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink, saying, Let alone, let us see whether Elias will come to take him down. And Jesus cried with a loud voice and gave up the ghost. And the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom. And when the centurion which stood over against him saw that he so cried out and gave up the ghost, he said, Truly, this man was the Son of God." This week we come to, as I've already said, the statement that is the climax of Mark's gospel. It powerfully summarizes the theme of Mark's gospel. It is the single statement that I have sought to keep in front of our minds throughout this entire study. It's been on the back of the bulletin every week. It's been on the PowerPoint every time we've had one during the message. It is, and oddly enough, It comes from the lips of the Roman centurion who stood guard over Jesus. After Jesus died, the centurion's response to all that had gone on was, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." And Mark has gone to great lengths throughout this gospel to show us that Jesus is God the Son. And now we see God, the Son of God, slain on a cross. What mystery is this? What marvel this is? And this morning as we stare at the cross, we do so in very particular remembrance. We have spent much of the last month viewing the events and the horrors surrounding Jesus' death. But today we add something else. We add a significant portion to memorialize Jesus' suffering. Because as we gather today and we take part in communion, we do more than just eating and drinking. What we do is a God-given testimony. It is a memorial instituted by Christ. It is a memorial in which we depict for one another both the horrible and the wonderful scenes of the cross. And so as we prepare our hearts for this, I want us to consider three voices from this passage this morning. We're not going to exegete it as we typically do. I want to just pull out a couple snippets. I want us to consider the voice of Jesus crying out from the cross. I want us to consider the voice of God responding to the cross. And then I want us to consider the voice of the centurion responding to the Christ on the cross. And the first we see here is the voice of Jesus. Verse 34, as he cries out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? The four Gospels together reveal to us a total of seven statements made by Jesus from the cross. Mark only records for us one of those statements, this one I have just read, and it is one of the most incredible lines in all of the Bible. Charles Spurgeon described this cry as a deep mine whose depths none can fathom. And even a brief consideration of the statement quickly leaves the Christian engulfed in wonder. God the Son, who had known an eternal and perfect fellowship with the Father, is now forsaken by God. I don't know that we can really wrap our minds around that. I say that we understand the words, but the depth of meaning. I mean, how does this happen? How does this work? What does it mean? I mean, there is not time enough in all the span of human history to properly forsake or discuss the Son's forsakenness. This is a monumental statement. We may begin to understand it in eternity. And this cry, this astounding anguish of Christ, is the voice of suffering. It is the voice of one paying the full penalty of sin. When he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? He's doing more than crying out in despair. He is doing more than fulfilling prophecy. He's doing more than quoting the Psalms. So he's doing all of that. And to understand what he's doing, I need to remind you that the wages of sin is death. Death does not start when breath departs, the heart stops, and the brain ceases. Death began long ago when Adam and Eve sinned. And on the day they sinned, they died. They were cut off from the giver of life. Immediately separated from the one who is life. And all of their offspring have been born under that same curse, dealing with that same separation. And the consequence of such separation from the source of life is an eventual physical death. And if that separation from God is not remedied, it results in eternal death, in which the unfortunate one is forever separated from God. And the wages of sin is separation from God. For Jesus to pay the penalty of the sin, he did not just have to suffer. The penalty of sin could not be paid by physical death alone. To purchase man's redemption, our substitute had to pay the full penalty of sin. He had to be separated from God. And during that afternoon of darkness, Jesus suffered the indescribable horror of being separated from his heavenly Father. As the earth was for a time cut off from the full benefit of the rays of the sun, so Jesus was for a time cut off from full fellowship with the Father. Jesus was forsaken by God in a way I cannot explain. I don't think I could ever understand. But Jesus was forsaken by God so we would not be. As one commentator said of this, the Lord endured the darkness of separation that we might enjoy the delights of salvation. He was forsaken instead of us. And a little while later, Jesus cried out again. Mark just tells us he cried out with a loud voice. He doesn't tell us the words. The Gospel of John kind of fills in some of those blanks there. But this is not the whisper of a man finally succumbing to a long and gradual death. This is the cry of a man standing before death in victory. In fact, the Gospel of John tells us that it was at this time that Jesus cried, "It is finished." And there is an incredible transition to, "Why have you forsaken me?" to, "It is finished." And I would that I had time to unpack the flow of those statements on the cross this morning, but he had endured all of the wrath of God. He had paid the penalty of sin. All that was left was that physical death which would conclude the work. It was done. And a marvelous statement full of promise that echoes today with the truth of salvation. Christ has done it all. He cried with a loud voice, "It is finished," and then he gave up the ghost Again, he said in verse 37. And we use this phrase often to describe death. It's one of our polite euphemisms for death. But we don't use it the way the gospel writers did. Because this phrase is not passive. It's not something that happened to Jesus. This is an active phrase. It is something Jesus did. He dismissed his spirit. Only the Son of God can do this. Only the Creator of life can do this. And Jesus hung there on the cross. He was not defeated by death. He humbly bowed his head before death. He gave himself willingly to die. And when he breathed his last, it was not because death had overtaken him and death had overthrown him, but because he had willingly stooped before that dark specter. And if Christ had not given himself to death, death would have had no power over him. And in his willing death, Jesus overthrew death. There's so much here that time does not begin to allow us to delve into, but Augustine said, I think he just sums it up greatly when he says he gave up his life because he willed it, when he willed it, and as he willed it. This cry is the voice of victory. The pardon is purchased. Redemption is paid. Forgiveness has been accomplished. Justification finished. Adoption secured. Salvation completed. It's done. And now that the work is done, he dismisses his spirit. And then verse 38, we see the voice of God. Here God does not speak from heaven in a thunderous voice as he has done before. God does something that, in my mind, is even more remarkable. You see, when God gave the law to Moses, he instructed Israel to build a tabernacle. The tabernacle was the center of worship. At the tabernacle was where the altar stood, where the priests were, where sacrifice for sin was made. And in the very back of the tabernacle was a room that was completely closed off. Inside that room were just a few pieces of furniture, including the Ark of the Covenant. And on top of the Ark was a special place, a beautifully carved, if you will, statue called the Mercy Seat. And for many years, the presence of God was visible above that Mercy Seat. And when King Solomon built a temple to replace the temporary tabernacle, it too had a closed-off room in the very back. And that room was called, in both the temple and the tabernacle, the Holy of Holies. And there in that room was the presence of God, and it was a constant reminder, a constant sign of the presence of God. But not only that, there was a constant reminder that none could come into God's presence. The way was closed. Only one time a year could one man enter the Holy of Holies and there sprinkle blood on the mercy seat for the covering of the nation's sin. Otherwise, it was closed. One wall, the front wall, the way by which the priest entered, was completely covered by a massive curtain. That wall was this huge veil, a wondrous piece of fabric, finely woven, beautifully decorated, stretched from wall to wall, from floor to ceiling. This huge veil was inches thick. Massive piece of fabric. And when Jesus dismissed his spirit, the dividing veil, this curtain that closed off man from the presence of God, was torn in two. This here is the voice of God. This is the response of God to the work of His Son. No man could tear this veil. From the top to the very bottom, It was torn completely in two. It was an impossible feat accomplished by the power of God that signified something even more wonderful. Here we see the voice of promise. The way is now open. No more is man restricted from coming to the Father. The way to the mercy seat is open for all who will come. The privilege restricted to only one man, one time a year, is given to all who will receive it to be enjoyed constantly. That which was a forbidden room has been replaced by a freeway to life. It's a marvelous thing that we see here. The way into the Holy of Holies, the heavenly presence of God, is open because of the blood of Jesus. And the last voice I want us to see this morning is the voice of faith. This is the declaration that Mark has set out to prove throughout this gospel. He has given evidence after evidence after evidence to it, and he uses as his chief and final witness a Roman centurion. I think there's beautiful things happening here, but he takes this pagan, ruthless soldier that stood at the foot of the cross, and he saw what the Jews would not see. As we think of this man, he was maybe similar in rank to a lieutenant in charge of a division. He was responsible for 100 men in the Roman army, and this particular centurion was entrusted with overseeing the 3 crucifixions that day. Under him were different squads of men who carried out his orders and stood guard over the cross, but it was this centurion that stood by and watch to make sure that everything went as it was supposed to. It's very likely that this man had been around during the trial of Jesus. He may have been one of those entrusted with guarding Jesus early on, but it's very likely that he was there and very aware of all that was happening. Here he heard the Jews' demands. He heard Pilate's protest and Pilate's decrees of Jesus' innocence. He saw Jesus and the way he carried himself throughout. He was there when Jesus was scourged and mocked. He was there as Jesus carried the cross to Golgotha. He watched as the soldiers nailed Jesus to that wood. He stood by and he watched for the entire 6 hours of his crucifixion. He heard the jeers and Jesus' response. He saw the interaction between Jesus and his mother. He saw Jesus promise eternal life to the thief beside him. He saw the darkness cover the land. He felt the earthquake. He heard Jesus cry of victory and he watched him die. And I think it's reasonable to assume that at first the centurion probably joined in the scorn and abuse of Jesus. There's no reason to think he was not one of those many that mocked him. But something changed. Though he had little knowledge of Christ, did not have the knowledge of the Word of God like the Jews did, despite his ignorance of the Word, he believed Jesus to be God the Son. This centurion believed what the greatest biblical scholars of that day rejected. Stop and examine this for just a moment. The faith is astounding. The faith of this man, the response is amazing to me, but there's something else that is even more incredible. We see in this statement, as he says, truly, this man was the Son of God. And as I said, I think this is a statement of faith. He believes Jesus is exactly who he claimed to be. But in that statement, too, we see again that thing which is even more incredible. We see again the reality, God the Son was betrayed and abandoned by his disciples. God the Son was spurned by his chosen people. God the Son was declared innocent and then condemned as though guilty. God the Son was tortured and mocked by godless soldiers. God the Son was executed in the most horrible fashion. And then God the Son was forsaken by God the Father. I don't know if we can feel the full weight of this. God the Son died. And He died in our place. The giver of life gave up His own life. Christ says, greater love hath no man than this, than that a man lay down his life for his friends. And yet I say to you today, we see here on the cross a love that far exceeds that. We see the God-man lay down His life for His enemies. We see a love in which He is who is Creator bows to the will of creation, and speak loosely there, but bows before the suffering and the onslaughts of creation for the redemption of that same creation which has rebelled so horribly against Him. He who is eternally and infinitely God died for those who hated and scorned Him. Truly, truly, He is the Son of God. Our time today ends with the visible reminder of what God the Son endured. But as we go to communion, I want you to listen as I read a full account of the crucifixion from all four Gospels. When the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put Him to death. And when they had bound Him, they led Him away unto the hall of judgment. It was early, and they themselves went not into the judgment hall, lest they should be defiled, that they might keep the Passover. Pilate went out unto them, and said, what accusation bring ye against this man? They answered and said unto him, if he were not a malefactor, we would not have delivered him up unto you. Then Pilate said unto them, take ye him, and judge him according to your law. The Jews therefore said unto him, it is not lawful for us to put any man to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled which he spake, signifying what death he should die. And they were the more fierce, saying, he stirreth up the people, teaching throughout all Jewry, beginning from Galilee to this place. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked whether the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged unto Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was at Jerusalem at that time. And when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceeding glad, for he was desirous to see Him of a long season, because he had heard many things of Him, and he hoped to have seen some miracle done by Him. Then he questioned with him in many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priest and scribes stood and vehemently accused Him. And Herod with his men of war set Him at naught and mocked Him and arrayed Him in a gorgeous robe and sent Him again to Pilate. Then Pilate entered into the judgment hall again and called Jesus and said unto Him, art Thou the King of the Jews? Jesus answered him, sayest Thou this thing of Thyself? Or did others tell it to thee of me? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Thine own nation and the chief priests have delivered thee unto me. What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from here. Pilate therefore said unto him, Art thou a king then? Jesus answered, Thou sayest that I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice. Pilate saith unto him, What is truth? Then said Pilate to the chief priest and to the people, I find no fault in this man. Ye have brought this man unto me as one that perverteth the people. Behold, I, having examined him before you, have found no fault in this man, touching those things whereof ye accuse him. No, nor yet Herod, for I sent you to him, and lo, nothing worthy of death is done unto him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. The Jews answered him, We have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God. When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he was the more afraid, and went again into the judgment hall, and said unto Jesus, Whence art thou? And he answered to him never a word, insomuch that the governor marveled greatly. Then saith Pilate unto him, Speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee, and have power to release thee? Jesus answered, Thou couldst have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Therefore he that delivered me unto thee has the greater sin. And from thenceforth Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, If you let this man go, you are not a friend, Caesar's friend. Whosoever maketh himself a king speaketh against Caesar. When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus forth and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in the Hebrew Gabbatha. When he was set down on the judgment seat, his wife sent unto him, saying, Have nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of it. Now at that feast, the governor was wont to release unto the people a prisoner, whom they would. And they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate saith unto them, Whom will ye that I release unto you, Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ? For he knew that for envy they had delivered him. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said unto them, Whether of the twain will ye that I release unto you? They said, Barabbas. Pilate saith unto them, What shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? They all say unto him, Let him be crucified. And the governor said, Why? What evil hath he done? But they cried out the more, saying, Let him be crucified. When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it. Then answered all the people and said, His blood be on us and on our children. Then released he Barabbas unto them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. And the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the common hall and gathered unto him the whole band of soldiers. And they stripped him and put on him a scarlet robe. And when they had plaited a crown of thorns, they put it upon his head and a reed in his right hand. And they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews. And they spit upon him and took the reed and smote him on the head. And after that they had mocked him, they took the robe off from him and put his own raiment on him and led him away to crucify him. And as they led him away, they laid hold upon one Simon, a Cyrenian, coming out of the country, and on him they laid the cross, that he might bear it after Jesus. And there followed him a great company of people and of women, which also bewailed and lamented him. But Jesus, turning unto them, said, Daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming in which they shall say, Blessed are the barren, and the womb that never bare, and the paps which never gave suck. Then shall they begin to say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if they do these things in a green tree, what shall be done in the dry? And there were also two other malefactors led with him to be put to death. And when they were come to the place which is called Calvary, there they crucified him. And the criminals, one on the right hand and the other on the left. Then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they parted his raiment and cast lots. And the people stood beholding. And the rulers also with them derided him, saying, He saved others, let him save himself, if he be Christ, the chosen of God. And the soldiers also mocked him, coming to him and offering him vinegar, and saying, If thou be the king of the Jews, save thyself. And they gave him vinegar to drink, mingled with gall. And when he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. And they crucified him, and parted the garments, casting lots, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet. They parted my garments among them, and upon my vesture did they cast lots. And sitting down, they watched him there, and set up over his head his accusation written, This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Cleophas and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple standing by whom he loved, he saith unto his mother, Woman, behold thy son. Then saith he to the disciple, Behold thy mother. And from that hour that disciple took her unto his own home. And they that passed by reviled him, wagging their heads, and saying, Thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross. Likewise also the chief priest, mocking him with the scribes and elders, said, He saved others, himself he cannot save. If he be the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him. He trusted in God, let him deliver him now, if he will have him. For he said, I am the Son of God. The thieves also, which were crucified with him, cast the same in his teeth. But the other answering rebuked him, saying, Dost thou not fear God, seeing now are in the same condemnation? And we indeed justly. For we receive the due reward of our deeds, but this man has done nothing amiss. And he said unto Jesus, Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. And Jesus said unto him, Verily I say unto you, today thou shalt be with me in paradise. And about the sixth hour, there was darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Some of them that stood there, when they heard that, said, This man calleth for Elias. After this, Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the scriptures might be fulfilled, saith, I thirst. Now there was set a vessel full of vinegar, and they filled a sponge with vinegar, and put upon a hyssop, and put it to his mouth. And the rest said, Let be, let us see whether Elias will come to save him. When Jesus therefore had received the vinegar, he said, It is finished. And when Jesus had cried with a loud voice, he said, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And having said thus, he bowed his head and gave up the ghost. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in two from the top to the bottom. And the earth did quake, and the rocks rent, and the graves were opened, and many body of the saints which slept arose. Now when the centurion and they that were with him watching Jesus saw the earthquake and those things that were done, they feared God greatly, saying, Truly, this was the Son of God.